Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, Rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Pops, Pops. Pops, 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 Pops.
Oh Gott, yes!
Holy Mac and Cheese Balls.
Ja, es ist Episode 38. Eine Interview-Episode gibt es noch, bevor die Saison wieder losgeht. Da gibt es natürlich einmal ein Resümee von Drive to Survive und dann machen wir natürlich auch ja, unsere super tollen Predictions, die vermutlich wieder der volle Schar sein werden. Aber wichtig, daher reden müssen wir.
Ja, und wir dürfen nicht vergessen, sehr unterhaltsam, Beate, muss ich sagen.
Genau.
Sehr unterhaltsam.
Aber heute widmen wir uns wieder ganz speziell einer Person, die sich auch sehr viel Zeit für uns genommen hat am Anfang der Saison. Da haben wir nämlich schon mit dem Josh Cruz was aufgenommen. Der ist Digital Producer bei der Scuderia Alpha Tauri.
Und ich freue mich richtig drauf. Ich bin ja immer auf TikTok unterwegs und auf Facebook und also prinzipiell überall.
Facebook, du Boomer.
Ja, was soll ich machen? Gehört halt dazu, was der Marketing und so, ne? Aber persönlich bin ich sehr gerne auf TikTok und ich finde das so toll, was die machen. Und die steigen da immer auf alle Trends zu und der Yuki und der Pierre sind wirklich, also 10 von 10 Punkten. Taugt man.
Eben ja. Da dahinter steckt eben auch der Josh, unser heutiger Podcast-Gast. Deshalb legen wir auch natürlich gleich los und da mal nachgefragt, ob das eigentlich immer schon so sein Plan war, in der Formel 1 zu arbeiten.
No, I thought I was going to be an AFL player, to be honest. But then when I realized I didn't have the talent, I tried other sports and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was on course to be actually a silversmith about 11 years ago, which is, you know, restoration of old antiques and plating and polishing. And I was doing that and it didn't really work out. I loved the job, but it just didn't really work out. So I went back to school and studied. And obviously I was heavily into F1 at this point. And I thought, okay, I'm too tall and don't have skills to drive, but maybe I can go to races and write about it. Mm-hmm. Because I always had it. Interest in writing and I was good at English in high school. Yeah, I went back to school and studied. I got a diploma in sport development, which sort of covered a lot of areas. I'm not really sure what it did, but it sort of helped me sort of grow and become more confident. And then went to university and studied sports journalism with the goal. At this point, I knew exactly what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be and how to get there. So I sort of put like a long-term plan in place, worked two or three jobs at a time, while studying, so that counted up to 80 hours a week sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you sort of got to wave goodbye to your social life sometimes, and that's what I did. Yeah, so I knew what I wanted, and then I just sort of burst my way in there. Once I was finishing university, like my final year, I started going to races and as a sort of freelancer and getting the feel for it and meeting people and stuff. So that was my entry. I was very lucky to sort of fall into some good support group. Whilst I sort of did a few, being from Melbourne, it's difficult. So I did a few of the flyaway races first, like Melbourne, of course, Singapore, Malaysia, Abu Dhabi, the ones sort of can get to because Europe was a bit too far. In my mind, I planned to move to Europe first to make a full stab at it. Yeah, so that was my entry. I had my first taste of the paddock in 2013 in Australia, interviewing a technical guy at Shell. And even then, just buzzing in. I'm sure you know the sound of buzzing in. That's just everyone's sort of favorite moment, I think, when you get into the paddock. I'm like, yeah, this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
Quite hard to get there. And eventually I moved to London in 2016 to cover Formula One full time as a freelancer. And I wasn't getting paid at all at some point. Like it was just sort of taking that sort of dive and pushing your way in to try and get any work that's available. And that's where those 80-hour weeks came back in. From working a couple of jobs while studying to save, to back yourself, to make a move to Europe and try and get into a sport that you love and a job that you love.
And now you're working for AlphaTauri.
I am, yeah. It's a crazy, yeah. Sometimes I do, you know, especially when you've got lockdown and you've got days at home and you're just thinking, what can I do today and not watch Netflix? You know, you find yourself going down a wormhole of like, you know, Google memories and Facebook memories and all that sort of stuff and you just scroll through and you can spend an hour or two just going through even your camera roll and seeing, okay, yeah, this time 4 years ago, I was here. And, you know, being a freelancer, it's not glamorous. You do it the hard way. You sleep on people's floors and you travel to races driving and all that sort of stuff. So you make good memories and stuff, but some of the times it's just awful. You look back on it and go, geez, you know, you've gone through a lot to get here. And now I'm just sitting in an apartment in sunny Italy. So I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining.
And what exactly are you doing now?
So I'm a digital producer at Scuderia AlphaTauri. I joined the team towards the end of 2017, mm-hmm. sort of taking over the social media accounts to try and help grow and make the team more prominent online. So I'm a trained journalist, but I had sort of interest in digital media as well. So I sort of implemented more into my role where it's just, you know, making a lot more videos and interesting content rather than just tweeting and Instagramming. I wanted to create a more behind the scenes experience, which is what everyone wants and everyone tries to do. So it was just sort of, how do you do it? So fast forward to today, I make a lot of videos with the drivers and just sort of cover a race weekend and try and keep people engaged because you've got 9 other teams to cope with and to stand out. So my main thing is to try and figure out what they're not doing and what can I do that's mm-hmm. hasn't been done before, which is very difficult. What can I do just a little bit differently that sets us apart? You know, anyone can tweet it's race week on a Monday morning, but what can I do differently than that? Because I'm not a fan of that. So I thought, okay, how can I get people engaged? People love to talk about music and what they're listening to right now. I'm going to put a garage playlist up and let everyone comment what they want. And I'm going to collate it and then put their names next to it so they can see their name on our social media accounts. I think that was one of the most things I'm proud of so far because it was just a bit like I said before, I wanted to make things different. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a good way of doing it. Plus it's a good way to sort of grow your account as well. That's the main parts of what I do.
How does a race weekend look like for you? When do you start? When do you finish your race weekend? How does it look like through your lenses?
Through my many lenses, you're right. Yes. it varies from race to race, but it's always busy. It would start probably that Monday, and it's just sort of planning what you're doing for that race weekend and what content you want to provide and get, because certain races are more not important than others, but for the team, they're bigger than others. So like when we go to France, because we have Pierre, it's bigger. And I'm talking non-COVID spec because this is completely different. But when you go to France, there's more media involved. The local media want to get involved. We're part of Red Bull, so Red Bull would like to do things as well, which is all great. It just makes it busier, and you have to sort of coordinate your time a bit differently than other races. A typical race weekend is just, you know, you prepare for the week. I do my garage playlist on the Monday and then start collating it Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, give people a chance to put their songs in. Make sure there's no double ups with people. I take that sort of quite seriously as well. I don't want someone getting in there twice, so to try and give it a fair go. So that takes a bit of time. It might seem easy just putting 10, 20 songs in a list plus the extras on Spotify. Then, yeah, you get to the track Thursday, media day, do the track walk, get some pictures, get some videos from that. You sort of go on autopilot if it's a normal race weekend because you sort of cover the media day and try and get what you can from that. Then track action starts Friday and you start talking about cars on track, choosing the best picks, trying to get some reaction from the drivers if you can, because it gets busier for them as the weekend goes on. So anything you need to get needs to be done on the Thursday. Mm-hmm. If I want to do a video for social or a sponsor or a partner, I need to be done on the Thursday, because once Friday happens, it's like, nah, that's their job now. That's the other part of their job, racing. Mm-hmm. Get everything done Thursday. Friday, you talk about practice. Saturday and Sunday, quality in the race. So you do go into a bit of autopilot sometimes. But the main thing for me is just being everywhere, at least where the drivers are, at least one where one is with a camera, mm-hmm. to make sure I can capture anything sort of either behind the scenes or sort of nudge them in the right direction. I can see something that might be funny and just prompt them saying, just quickly do this. And, you know, each driver is different. You have to understand sort of their personality and what they're comfortable with. Pretty much all of them that I've worked with so far, they've all got their own little quirks that you can sort of open up. And I think that's part of like a skill of realizing what they're comfortable with and what they can sort of, what you can get away with pushing them to try and do and ask for, mm-hmm. and knowing how sort of people online will react to that. And so for me, like one of the biggest not challenges, but the one I loved pushing the most was Danny Kvyat.
Yeah.
Because he can come across a bit like serious on his media interviews for the most part. But then, like, you know, once sort of the camera goes off, he's like one of the funniest guys I've met. And so I bring the camera up and he goes, yeah, you can film it, but you can't post it. So that was like the hardest part of my my past couple of years of just like, I've got so much good Danny content. And he was just like, nah, you're not posting that.
Oh, no.
I got my way at the end. I did like a compilation of his like best bits like at the end of last year, which is good. And he was like, yeah, go for it. So he was easy towards the end. It was good.
And how much do you plan in advance?
Like, I'm already starting to think about Japan this year, what we can do there, and France, obviously. You think about the drivers' home races, if they have one. And, yeah, they're my main ones at the top of my list. And then if I have a good idea, I think what's the best place to mm-hmm. do that. A couple of years ago, I thought – I'd seen it. I'm not saying I came up with the idea, but I thought I want to show the proper ins and outs of a driver's day mm-hmm. at a busy race. So I thought, okay, I can – strap a GoPro to him for like the whole day, and what's the busiest race for that? Easily that's Monaco mm-hmm. because there's an extra day as well. The idea sort of came in like December, January, and then I just had to choose the race where I wanted to do it and then just plan around that sort of plan of the weekend. And sometimes the best ideas come without planning. Yeah. You might sort of be at a race. This is why being sort of near the drivers and around what's happening is very beneficial, because you'll see something and you think, great, I can actually work with this and make it a bit bigger. There is quite a bit of planning involved, but you just have to be reactive.
Okay, and when was a race weekend successful for you, where you say, yes, this was really, really great, we have done a great job?
When I don't make any spelling mistakes.
Note, watch out if there are any spelling mistakes.
I genuinely have a problem with making mistakes. I hate it. Yeah, especially with Twitter as well. Sometimes you have to be very quick. Well, yeah, generally you always have to be pretty quick with commenting on a race or quali or something, especially quali. Like, you know, you do a lap and you can say, yeah, that's popped us into Q2 or whatever, and then Q2 has already started. So you need to sort of get things out. So making a spelling mistake on Twitter is the worst, because you can't edit it and it really annoys me. A successful weekend is one that I know I haven't made any mistakes, visible large mistakes. I can always say, oh, I could have done this better. Like, mm-hmm. cherry on top would be having outlets or big accounts or other sporting accounts talk about what we've done. Mm-hmm. Like, if we've done a really cool video or a photo or a meme or whatever it is, and you've got other accounts interacting with you and promoting and saying, you know, this is a job well done. Like, there's having that sort of I'm not looking for validation from other accounts, but it's nice when you see it sort of pop up in your timeline. I did a stupid Photoshop meme of the Bernie Sanders sitting on the chair. Putting him next to Pierre on the podium.
That was hilarious.
Thank you. That was just about being reactive to a certain trend at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I woke up and I always listen to the news every morning and I see what's happening. I'm like, okay, this is quite strong. And you get to the office and you're like, I know what I can do to sort of jump on this at the right time. But yeah, so putting that out there and having different sporting codes, politicians, American journalists sort of quoting it on Twitter and seeing it on Reddit and Instagram and stuff is a little ego boost, if I'm honest. It's just like, yep, I can go home today. I've done my bit.
Another point of social media is, of course, shitstorms. Do you have something like a shitstorm plan?
Do I have a plan? No, you can't have a plan. You just have to sit down and embrace yourself. It's the same, like, you know, the Haas situation right now. Mm-hmm. So in that role, like, that guy, the person, I know the person who's behind the account, and I'm just thinking it would suck so much just being, because he's copying, like, he's the one who has to read all this and he has the one who has to deal with it and try and, no, he's just trying to do his job. Mm-hmm. But he's just having to brace and not lean into it, because you can't lean into something like that. But it's tough. Like, when a shitstorm occurs, there's not much you can do, because even if you try and react to it, if you start trying to comment back to people, you know, that's just another can of worms entirely. Like, you can't do that. And I've seen another team try that a couple of years ago, and it's not a good look when you try and fight with fans. You just have to leave it. And, you know, we've experienced it too. You know, the harsh nature of Red Bull sometimes, I mean, not harsh, but, like, you know, this is the way Red Bull is. You know, the junior drivers have certain time to prove themselves, and when they're, if they've had too long or if they're not performing enough, they have to sort of find a new seat.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a lot of you know, backlash sometimes, and when we're doing a driver change, and that's just normal. Like, there's not, it's not, we're not the ones choosing it. So we just try, you just have to try and do your best to try and word things in a certain way when you're posting about an ex driver or a driver who hasn't been renewed or something. Like, you, I think it's just the best you can do is just play with the wording, and even picture and video choice as well can be important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I found out the hard way as well. Sometimes I put up, you can put up a photo or a video that you think, yeah, this is good content or whatever. But since it's of an ex-driver, or if it's like of the driver who hasn't been renewed or something, people will pick apart that video thinking you're making fun of them. Like, online interpretation is interesting at times. Even, like, more recently, I post something about Yuki,
mm-hmm.
not making fun of his height whatsoever, and everyone's trying to say, oh, admin having a dig at Yuki's height. I'm like, just put a photo of him next to Pierre. I can't hold that. Your guy's making the comments. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, it's your interpretation, not mine.
Exactly. If I was to put Yuki next to myself, then yes, that would be unfair. I'm a little bit taller than Yuki, but I'm not doing that. But he's good about it, though. He's it's funny to watch him lean into that online. he's quite funny.
Is there a race in the past where you think the content was just perfect? Where everything went so smoothly?
You're asking me to make my head a little bit bigger and...
Yes.
And boost my own ego.
Yes.
Toot my own horn. Get ready for it. Monaco.
Yeah.
I loved that. I was so happy with the edit of Monaco. The whole 24 hours with Pierre Gasly. That took me a long time to go through hours of footage and edit, put it together, and just be very meticulous with the editing, because it was done over 2 or 3 days just to try and get all the busy parts of a Monaco weekend into like that 22 minute format or whatever I uploaded it with. Super happy with that. You know, worked late nights to try and get it out in a timely manner, because as I said before, you can make a great video or have a great photo or something, but if you don't release it at the right time, it's gone. So if I release that Monaco video after the next race, which was Canada, it doesn't make sense. So I was super happy with that. The reaction was good, because people were like, this is a proper in-depth sort of glimpse of what an F1 driver does and how busy he is at a given race weekend. And Monaco is just that next level as well. So I was super happy with that. That was a while ago, that was my number one bit of content. When you're working with video and stuff at the track, it's very difficult with rights because Formula One management hold the rights. So you can't post like footage of the cars on track and stuff like that. So I tried to get like, because as part of that video, the base of the video was a driver's eye lap around Monaco. So I had borrowed some equipment from Formula One. They were helping me with this. So I grabbed these glasses that had a camera right in the middle of their eyes, pretty much.
Okay.
And sent Pierre around Monaco on his install lap. And yeah, it was really cool. Like, you can see what the driver sees, and I think it was one of the like first times you could sort of see that, especially in Monaco with like the walls so close and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't use it on our channels because it was Formula One footage. So
yeah.
It was like, so we had to sort of do it into a two-parter. Like, one was 24 hours with Pierre Gasly, and here's the end of it, the lap around Monaco, which obviously people wanted to see more. So, but I was still happy with it, because the exposure we got from like those two videos was very, very good.
And where do you think, okay, I really could have done better?
You just asked me to big myself up. Now you want me to
yes,
to self-critique?
Within
I'm still in gloating mode. Right, okay. There's definitely some times where you put a photo or a video up. Video as well, because it's just, once it's done, it's done. You're shooting some footage or something, and you only realize when you get back or whatever, it was out of focus. And that annoys the hell out of me as well. If you have something out of focus or a photo's out of focus as well, it's the same thing. It's just like, you thought you had a really good piece of content, or even just a normal piece that you needed, and then you go back and you're like, ah. Oh. Or even the audio. Like, it's just those small things that you think are just sort of, you don't think about when you're watching something on the internet, social media or whatever, and you see a video, you go, okay, this is a nice video, done. You don't think, okay, has the audio been edited to make it sound really good?
Mm-hmm.
Has the video been edited properly, or the cuts right, or, you know, are the colors right? Is it in focus and all this sort of stuff? So having something go wrong there irks me a lot. And it's happened before. I've had to use it. I've had to sort of, and it really, I'm really against it, but I've had no other choice but to put out like certain parts of a video where like there's certain bits and pieces that might be out of focus whilst I'm walking with the driver or whatever. I'm like, you know, I could have done better with that. The fast nature of Formula One, rushing through a paddock or whatever, it's just, it is difficult to sort of get everything right all the time. Formula One does such a good job of sort of how they portray like onboards and like the cars going around and the sound, for example. The sound is something that people always sort of take advantage of, I think, or take for granted, sorry. So when we do our own stuff from at a filming day or whatever, you don't realize until you actually try and do it. It's like, wow, like you try and do an onboard footage and the audio just sounds so bad because the wind's smashing the camera or you don't have the right audio equipment. And then you realize, okay, this is really, really impressive what Formula One can do. And, you know, I don't want to put out a video of like sort of the same sort of thing from a filming day, an onboard footage or whatever it is with a GoPro and the sound is just awful because everyone's so used to watching Formula One with good sound. So it's just small things like that you don't take for granted. So you have to work really hard to make sure your final product is good quality. And that's like sort of along with trying to be different, that's my main sort of goal for our channels, is just have that quality really, really good and make the sort of viewing or experience just a nice one so people will want to follow us more. So they know the pictures that we see are going to be super nice and the videos are going to be well edited or just well put together. Brought down enough now? Is that?
Yes, perfect.
Can I stop self-deprecating? Yeah, thank you.
We're on the same level now.
It's always good to get a reality check, so thank you.
What are your most memorable moments?
The podium finishes because it's not really expected. So the first one with Danny in Germany, like already that was a crazy race. And I remember, you know, being in the garage at the time and just sort of seeing, you know, we weren't really expecting anything throughout that race as well. It was wet. Alex was sort of doing well at the time. He was up in the top six or seven. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the race, and we're like, this is fantastic. It was his first time in the wet and he's, you know, going to score points. Yeah, first time in the wet ever in a Formula One car. So it was like, we're all super excited. And Danny had just pitted before the track was ready for slicks, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he'd done it before and we're like, okay, I didn't think much of it. I'm like, okay, it's good. You know, good to try something and maybe he can jump back in the top 10 as well. But then like the track evolved like so quickly and everyone needed to pit in front of him and all of a sudden he's like running in second and we're just like, okay, top four happened? Maybe top five, not bad. Yeah, okay, this could be good. Then you look at the laps left and there wasn't that many. It was like, oh crap, we actually could be on for a podium here. Then you just think, I think the first thought, like when the last couple of laps were happening and he was running at third at the time as well, it's like, what do we do? Like the main thing is, what do we do? Like, I had my boss, Fabi. She's been in the team since when it was Minardi still. Mm-hmm. So she's been around a long time and she was there with Seb in his win in 2008. So like she'd done the podium once before and even then she was like, oh, I never knew what to do. I was running around with Seb, like not knowing where to go. And sort of, you know, she was saying this to me and we had that sort of same thing because she was Danny's press officer for that year. And we're just sort of like, what are we doing now? Like we know he's going to finish third because there was no one really behind him. What do we do? Okay. So it's like, we had to sort of think the next steps whilst the race was still happening. But like, it's funny. It was sort of going in slow motion because you had to sort of think of two things at the same time and you was just breaking it down. You know, Fabi took care of all the, like where to go for Danny and all sorts of stuff. And I'm just thinking, all right, how do I cover this on a social media sort of standpoint? Because like, you know, we've never gotten a podium on social media before, when social media has been around. You know, 2008 was still early Facebook days and MySpace and yeah. The teams weren't really around.
Oh my God,
then.
MySpace.
I don't know what song would have been on our profile, but yeah. just capturing everything. What can we do? And you kind of, you get sucked into it as well because it's like you're part of this team and like, and you know Danny, he's such a good guy and he's come, like this is sort of like his comeback sort of podium. And just hearing him on the radio whilst you're trying to type out things as well. And that, like, so that was such a special moment. And then running around afterwards, just, you know, you become so busy trying to get everything and capture everything, put everything out and all that sort of stuff. So you become so busy, but you're enjoying it at the same time. And then, you know, to get to experience the exact same thing with Pierre in Brazil. And he just kept creeping up the order, and all of a sudden he was second, and there was like a restart, and you had Hamilton behind him. You know, my hands are all like sweaty, trying to like just trying to understand what was happening and how many laps are going. And then, you know, there's a really cool video of like one of our guests who took from the viewing area of the garage, like all the guys just running outside. We didn't know where he was going to finish, like, because mm-hmm. Hamilton was right behind him. So we're like running to the pit wall and sort of the barriers, putting our heads through and seeing those two cars come across, and like, you know, won't forget that image ever. Yeah. To see, because I think I'd like to say, I'm not sure, but I think I knew that it was our car first. It's hard to tell when you're like facing it, mm-hmm. When it's coming at you, and I'm like, yeah, he's got it. I just had this sort of feeling he's got it. And so I had to run straight back into the garage, and the wall in Sao Paulo is like really high. So like, I was like, I just jumped off, which was not the smartest thing to do. Run back into the garage, and then like, where did he finish? Before I say anything on social media and be an idiot and get it wrong, where did he finish? So I run back, and like, I think I even asked someone, like, where was it? Like, we're all celebrating, but what number was it? Yeah, just absolutely crazy. And that one was good, like, we could enjoy that one a bit more because we didn't have to leave on Sunday night to go back home, where mm-hmm. the European races, we generally leave on a Sunday night. So we all went out, like a few of us, just downstairs at the hotel bar and got to properly enjoy it. And just everyone had sort of their own like mini story to tell, even though we're all part of the team, we can hear the same thing. You know, you've got some of the engineers who could hear certain different parts of the intercom. Yeah, it was all the stories that just come out that night. Yeah, it was just, that was super nice. And obviously we did it again last year in Monza. So those three podiums, it's another feeling, especially, I think, yeah, the win was another one on itself because it was an actual win. You're generally pinching yourself, you know, your team, the one you work for, the one that hasn't won in 12 years has just mm-hmm. won a race, and it's at Monza. Like, I'm still getting goosebumps thinking about it right now talking. But I remember that one like really clear, like the last, I think he had 26 laps in the lead. But it was even before that where I just spoken to the other press officer, who's Jennifer, who's Austrian, by the way. She was standing next to me, and Pierre was like, he wasn't first at the time, but I was just thinking, like, you know, we've got, I think it was when the red flag happened, like, we've got a good chance of actually getting a podium on this one. And then it sort of became real once he was leading him, and like, okay, there's a couple of cars behind him. Hamilton has his penalty. There's a actual chance we might win this. And so that realization sort of creeps in, and you say to someone, they're like, don't say that. You know, you can't say that. You're going to jinx it.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'll shut up. But I think it was like 15 or 12 laps to go, I was already Googling how many days since our last win. Yeah. I put the time, and I'm like, oh, just in case, just, I've got to be ready. So for this podium, the third one, I was ready. I was like, we've got it. I've got the thing to post. Okay, yes, Pierre's won. Let everyone bask in our glory of on social media. And then the next tweet was like, it's been X amount of days since the last win. And like, it was just that good stat to have straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good to have that sort of ready. And I'd learned from my two lessons of the last podiums. Like, okay, what can I do? How can I make this even like... So they're the obvious ones, just the podiums. Those like the most memorable moments. There's just a lot of just being a part of something, being a part of a team, and then you know you're traveling with certain people, and just even some time spent in the airport with some people. When you have a delay, it can be annoying, but it's you can make the most out of it.
What is the funniest story?
As a journalist, there were some funny ones. One of my closest mates that I've met whilst working in F1, his name is Nate Saunders. He's the ESPN journalist, and he's very funny. Like I said, I was sort of slumming it the first couple of years as a freelancer, and there was one time where I was sharing an apartment with him in Budapest, and his other colleague Lawrence as well. And Lawrence had gone out for the night with his girlfriend, and it was just us two. So we had a couple of drinks somewhere, and we came back to the apartment and just sort of called it a night around midnight or 12:30. And not drunk or anything, but I'm just like sleeping and stuff. I'm on the couch, and I sort of just like wake up an hour or so later and see like this person like in front of me. And I'm thinking I'm still dreaming, so I wasn't really paying him much attention, but he's like moving around. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? So I like sort of stand up. It wasn't Nate and it wasn't Lawrence. It was someone who'd broken into our apartment. And so, okay, what do I do now? I'm half asleep. I'm not really comprehending this. It was one of those weird things. I don't know what I'm doing right now. So I just sort of sat up a bit, and the guy has realized I'm awake now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a deer in the headlights. He's just staying there. I'm like, I just sort of said, who are you? He just didn't answer me. So I realize at this point I've woken up a bit more, and he looks very sort of small. Like, it was stupid for me to do what I've done next, but like, I sort of stood up over him and started like pushing him out, shouting at him sort of, because that's like, I'd woken at this point. I'm like, oh, you know, get out, like, you know, swearing off, saying get the F out and what have you. And he wasn't actually moving until I actually moved towards him. He was just still like, it was like he was stunned. And I called Nate's name out a couple of times, like, Nate, you want to get out of here? You want to help me out? Whatever. And so the guy eventually leaves, and I was like, what the? I'm still sort of like stunned. What just happened? So I walked around to see if he's taken anything. That was the first thing. And I was like, and then I just went back to bed. And we woke up the next morning getting ready to go to track. And I said, Nate, did you hear anything last night? And he sort of like looks at me and goes, oh, I think like I didn't hear much, but I sort of dreamt last night that you were sort of shouting my name. And is that you? And it's hard to relay how funny it was. It was just his like confused face of like, no, didn't really hear much. I didn't dream you were sort of shouting or something, but that was weird. I said, yeah, Nate, we almost robbed. Oh, shit. Literally just looks at me and goes, oh, shit. He'll say like nonplussed about it and goes, oh, wow, like, geez, should have called me. Like,
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So like that, I mean, at the time it was just a weird thing, but I just laughed. Like when we got back to the track and we were talking about it, I just laughed so hard. Like, it's not like a typical funny story of almost getting robbed. Yeah. But just having him involved, just well, sort of like he just didn't care. He's just like that. We were in Canada, waiting for our flight, and we were at a bar, and unfortunately, Nate's just one of those guys where these things happen too. So like this robbing situation, probably because he was there. If it was just me, it wouldn't have happened. But since it's Nate, it was just there.
Okay.
We're in Canada, and we're in the airport waiting to go home because we're on the same flight, and we're in this bar with these high tables. So to like, it's a high table with a round circle on top. Mm-hmm. And we ordered sort of like poutine and a beer. And he's sort of gone through his beer much quicker. You know, don't get me wrong, I like a beer, but I was just enjoying it. And these two girls sat next to us, two young girls, like, you know, backpackers it looked like. One was like really upset, crying, like almost inconsolable. It was either a bad breakup or a death. It was like one of those heavy crying.
Mm-hmm.
And so she just started getting her crying under control. And Nate was just sort of like talking as he does. And he's about to go, oh, you know what? I'm going to get another beer. So he just stands up, knocks the table ever so slightly. And my full beer has just gone all over, not the other girl, but the girl who was crying. And she's just like looked at Nate and just, I've seen this sort of connection, and she's looked at him and her face just starts bawling. Like she's crying heavily again. Again, she's inconsolable, and Nate's just like stuck there going, what have I done? And he's just bubbling saying, what can I do? Here, I do want some money. And
oh, no.
like her day, she is thinking my day can't get any worse. And yeah. Then this guy has just poured a full glass of beer all over me.
Oh no.
I'm going to send this to Nate. He's gonna love that I'm telling all these embarrassing stories.
Sounds like a good trail mate.
Yeah, he like so that was part of my experience of getting into Formula One. It's yeah. It's traveling with all these people, sharing houses and stuff. And look, Nate's just an innocent bystander here. I picked on him. If I can I pick on Chris Medland as well?
So sure.
Another great one. I can't wait to send this to them. Another great one is Chris had like the weekend from hell. Austria 2017, we were sort of sharing a house in the hills. There was no reception, there was no hot water. Like, you had to sort of light a fire for hot water. It was like fantastic. And
romantic.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you could say that. And yeah, there was a couple of us staying there, and Chris had he'd like gotten a speeding fine on the way there. So he's like, oh mate, yeah, my weekend's gotten off to a bad start, but yeah, this will be fine, whatever. Then he's on the way to the track, we got up and he's reversed. Instead of going forward, he's reversed the car and smashed the barn. So he's like ruined the hire car. He's like put a heavy dent in the hire car and like hit the barn as well. And it's just like, that sucks for you. Like anytime, but now you've got a speeding fine and you've hit the barn. And so he's having like the weekend from hell. We had traveled back to the Vienna airport on the Sunday night, massive storm, and I'm thinking something else is going to happen now because it's this huge storm. He gets through it, and we're going to have a couple of drinks at the airport hotel bar, and we're sharing a room in this hotel before he's got the 6:30 a.m. flight. I've got the 1 12 hours later. We're sharing a room, and he's like, "Yeah, all right, I'll be gone when you wake up or whatever. So I'll see you. I'm like, see you, mate." And it's just there's two single beds next to each other, and by the time I put my head down, I just woken up and just heard him swearing, going, "Fuck, fuck, what the fuck?" His alarm did not go off, and he's just running around trying to, it's 20 minutes until his flight.
Yeah.
And he's like running around trying to get everything. He's like, "Oh, Josh, maybe I'll leave my bag here. You can take it back or whatever." I said, "Do what you got to do." And so he's missed it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come back with his bag, and I was like, "Sorry, dude, like there's nothing I can do at this point." and so that caps off his, not yet, it almost caps off the weekend. What capped off his weekend from hell was Nate. Nate is sharing the room like right next to us, and they're both in the same flight. And Nate's walking out of the thing, I think he's a bit late at this point too, and he's gone past our room and just kept on going, right? So he messages Metters or Chris saying, "Oh, yeah, that sucks about your flight, man. Like, yeah. You know what's funny? I was going to knock on your door to wake you up, but I didn't want to wake Josh up. And I just kept going." And he got that message when I was there. And he's in the room. He's in the bathroom, like packing his things away still. And he looks at it. I think Nate's like boarding at this point when he sent this. And Metters is like rushing around, and he looks at his phone. And all I hear is from the bathroom, "Oh, you prick." And he's read this out to me. He's like, "Nate didn't knock on the door because he didn't want to wake you up."
But that's so kind.
Yeah.
It's the wrong thing. So I can get back to sleep. Metters misses his flight. Yeah. Nah, I don't want to wake Josh up.
Awesome.
So like those are my funny stories from Formula One, because it's just like, it's good. You can have fun in the paddock and all that sort of stuff. Things can happen. And, you know, I don't want to be one of those guys and say, "Yeah, it's funny because the driver is involved." But my funniest moments are just traveling with your friends who sort of taken you in, because Chris had been in F1 longer than me, and having, there's so many funny moments with them and some of the photographers who are around. Like there's like this sort of good sort of camaraderie around the sort of traveling group. So you try and hang out when you can, and because you know things like this are going to happen. Like whenever you go out for a drink, there is something funny that's going to happen, and it's great. It's just F1 can be full of good people, like a lot of good people, and it's just they're my funny moments.
Also man hört, gerade so das Ganze rundherum, so mit anderen Kollegen, da passieren echt die ärgsten Sachen und die lustigsten Sachen.
Voll. Ja. Also wirklich eins der lustigsten Interviews, glaube ich, die wir geführt haben, auch im Rahmen des Podcasts.
Ja, ein sehr cooler Dude, der Josh. Mhm. Ja, das war's mit unseren Interview-Episoden. Jetzt müssen wir uns auf die Suche nach neuen Gästen machen für die kommende Saison.
Und das heißt aber, die nächsten Folgen, da geht schon um Drive to Survive und das, was uns erwartet. Und noch ein paar Mal schlafen und die Saison beginnt.
Ja, oh haben wir Gott. Gut überstanden, die Pause. Ja. Na dann, gehen wir schlafen, dass wieder eine Nacht weniger ist, gell? Bis zum ersten Rennen.
Auf jeden Fall. Das ist eine super Idee. Gute Nacht.
Holy mac and cheese balls.
Im Frühling steigt so einiges. Die Temperaturen, die Stimmung und die Partys draußen. Nur die Preise. Die sinken jetzt bei vielen Produkten langfristig. Entdecke die neuen niedrigen Preise. Sogar bei vielen Möbeln für draußen. In deinem IKEA und auf IKEA.de.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.